evening, everyone. Welcome to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Vlogcast that comes from a skeptical point of view to answer some of the questions of why. This Vlogcast started as a combination of spite and the Streisand effect when some people on Facebook that I knew back from high school were posting stuff to Facebook that was factually lacking. And that's the way that they wanted to play with Facebook, and they didn't appreciate my way of playing with Facebook, which was to correct such mistakes. And they gave me shit about it. Part of this is to follow through with the old adage that sometimes the journey is more important than the destination. I am Shujin Tribble. I am known under that name all over the place. You can find me easily enough that way. I was born in Brooklyn, New York, to a Roman Catholic family, raised on Long Island. I currently reside outside of a very cold, by comparison, Buffalo, New York. I'm an unabashed atheist. We've had a little bit of technical problem tonight, so a couple of us are still getting here. We've got a little bit of an injured reserved list. We'll explain it all for you in just a couple of moments. Let me get started with we'll get to that in a couple of moments. We'll start off the introductions over into the Midwest of the U.S. Good evening, Bridget.
Good evening. I'm Bridget Fitch. I was born and raised in the South, have transplanted to the Midwest. I was born and raised in the Church of Christ. My family put the mental in fundamentalism, and I'm a poster child for the harm that fundamentalism can do to people. I finally got out in 2003 and fight back against biblical patriarchy and theocracy wherever I happen to find it.
Moving to the right, over to Pittsburgh. Very cold Pittsburgh, I assume, at this point. Good morning, Joey.
Yes, you are very correct, sir. Good evening, everybody. My name is Joe. I was born to an Irish Catholic family in Chicago, Illinois, raised in southern Ohio. I then spent 8 years in the United States military and am now a double graduate and living in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, as a humanist and atheist.
And congratulations, of course. Continuing on over to the I would assume not quite so cold because of all the hot air just outside of the Capitol. Good morning, I'm Red O-Tech.
Honestly, with all that stuff that's going on, what it did is it created a front, and it dragged more cold air in. So it went from being, you know, like 7 degrees above zero Celsius, now to -1°C, so hell is officially freezing over.
Congratulations.
My name's Unrenown Tech. I was born in Maryland, actually. Raised in New York, which probably explains a lot. It explains a lot about us, doesn't it, Sujin? Anyway, I grew up in a mixed religious background. Predominantly Catholic and Jewish on different sides of the family. And growing up, I tried practicing both different aspects of them, learning about the different tenets and things that made them different. At one point, I even, when I got later, got older and got into high school, I ended up joining a Young Life organization, a Christian youth group, and for a little while, became a born-again Christian. And then, I have to admit, it hit me later in life than it probably should have, but I entered the age of reason, and I realized it's all just full of shit. So I'm an atheist. Currently back in Maryland. And, you know, raising my son not as an atheist, but as a free thinker. As somebody who uses logic and reasoning, understands when his emotions are in control, when that's a good thing and can be useful, and when it's a bad thing and needs to be under control. And just trying to get along in the world like everybody else, except I'm not trying to oppress a whole bunch of people.
Good call there. And moving across the water over to Paris this morning. Hello, Joseph.
Good morning. My name's Joseph, originally from London, Ontario, Canada, living in Paris, France since 1989. And I'm doing everything I can to promote critical and independent thought.
Okay. Now, as folks who have watched the show on several occasions, listened to the show on several occasions, will notice, yeah, we're down a couple of hosts at the moment. Dallin right now is still taking care of some personal stuff, which, you know, I'm certain that he's watching or listening eventually, because he's got to do the audio thing. So, you know, we're thinking about you, man. You take care of yourself. We'll see you when you get done with it all. We've had a little bit of a weird techie thing. Most of us typically use Firefox to work with Google Hangouts. For whatever stupid reason, Google Hangouts did not want to fire up on my side for Firefox. I'm currently using Chrome because, well, it was the only other one that was installed, because what else am I going to use? Linux? What are you going to do? Well, hold on a second. Truth be told, I don't know that I've got Safari in the usual stuff.
Actually, that I can download. Even if you wanted to, you can't. Because if you're not running Mac OS, you can't run the version of Safari that supports Hangouts.
Oh, well, I have to see that.
Right.
Okay. And remember I was saying about the folks that weren't yet with us? Well, here's one of the ones I was going to make mention to. Chris, your high was very high and hot, so just speak softly and speak into your very fuzzy stick there.
Okay, is it any better now?
Whoa! Wow, way overblown. So whisper and say your hellos, because I'm going to get us started. Well, I've already got the show started. It's just a matter of getting your intro in. The magic of live radio, people.
He's muted.
Yeah, well, that's a very large.
Yeah, is that any better?
It somewhat. We'll fine tune it in a minute. So go ahead and introduce yourself for everybody.
Oh, hi, I'm Chris. I'm based in the UK, in the northwest of England, where I work in tech support. I've had a lifelong interest in science and critical thinking. And over the last few years, I've become sort of more active in the movement.
Okay. All right, and Heretic Woman will be joining us, or at least she's trying to. She's had a sound issue that she's trying to restart a computer, trying to fudge her way through it. Not quite sure what the hell's going on with all that, but hey, we're here, and really that's all that really matters, isn't it? So if you're watching live, of course, by all means, please take advantage of the question and answer system here at Google Hangouts. And we'll be more than happy to respond to the stuff that you've got. You can also live tweet at us at HolyCrapTV, and we'll be more than happy to, you know, respond for you that way also. Over here in the Q&A currently, Beth, yes, is wishing Joey congratulations, obviously. So smiley, facey guy over there. You do realize that the top part of your head is being cut off on your camera. You know that, right? There you go. Okay. That's much better. He doesn't care, but that's all right. And, of course, thank you very much from the rest of the crap crew. So we will have to see how things play out in a little bit, because it's going to be a little bit interesting. Let me get started over here, because we got stuff to discuss with your five-minute freestyle. With 5 minutes on the clock, with apologies to Noah, Heath, and Lucinda from The Scathing Atheist, your 5 minutes start right here. Now, normally there is a thing with FCC broadcasting where you're not supposed to be talking to a singular person. Now, yeah, it kind of bends the rules a little bit when you're dealing on the telephone, when you're talking with an individual and it's going out on the radio, but it's more along the lines of you're having a conversation on the phone with somebody, they're conversing back with you, but you're sharing that audio out with everybody else, and thereby you get around that particular limitation. So it's a little bit of a loophole, but it's an understood loophole, so it's not that big a deal. Fortunately, we don't have that particular constraint for this show at any time, at any point. So I get the opportunity of talking directly to you. In this particular case, yeah, I could be very easily just like any other broadcaster and saying, you know, it's you, but, you know, it's 12 million people watching at any one time. And of course, you know, all of those yous is, well, all 12 million.
You're being very optimistic there, Shu.
Yeah, well, the point of it is when you're dealing with broadcast television, for instance, you could have 12 million people watching, 6, 14 people, whatever. But the point is, I can talk directly to you as an individual. And for a lot of you folks, later this is going to be very generic, but there's somebody that I ended up talking with about last week's show and the stuff that I was talking about for the 5-minute freestyle last week, which if you have not yet seen it, and we still haven't done the 2016 elections, you might want to check back on that one. The question basically come up of dealing with what's going on with politics, what's going on with the way that we see life. The whole episode where we ended up talking with Reap from the Satanic Temple. And the question really came up, am I really seeing stuff the way that I think that I am? And a lot of the stuff that we talked about, a lot of stuff that I talked about, resonated very, very, very heavily. Especially the stuff when we were talking with Reap about the Satanic Tenets. And the question was, what does it say that me, as a good Christian, the denomination doesn't matter. Me as a good Christian, I think that I identify much closer with the tenets of the Satanic Temple than with Christianity. What the hell? What does that make me? When my religion is a good portion of what I am and who I am, because that's what I grew up with, and I get that. There is a video that was done by, I'll have to look it up somewhere. I forget if it was Dark Matter or whatever the heck it was, but talking about a letter from somebody who basically said, you know, I'm right at the door for atheism, but I don't want to go through because it's just this one little nagging thing and I'm not sure. And it was a beautiful love letter to this person to basically say, look, I get it. We've been there. Most of us have come through the same way that you have. It's okay. The door is open. And it's just a door. It's safe. Come on out. I'm not going to tell you to go ahead and just think that everything's going to be okay. I'm not going to tell you that everything's going to be bad either. I'm going to be the person that's going to say, I don't know what the future holds for you. Or quite literally for anybody else. Nobody really does. We can't make the decision for you as far as to what you should think or what you should believe or what you should identify as. But we're going to tell you, it's okay to explore those questions. I mean, hell, that's the entire purpose of this damn show. But don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to think. You don't have to make a decision anytime soon. You can always make whatever the decision's going to be at any time. But don't ever think that you aren't allowed to even explore the question. But if you do decide that you want to identify as something other than whatever it is that you've been saddled with all this time, take your time. We're not going anywhere, and if it helps, welcome to the crew. We'll be happy to have you. Just take the time to think. Just take the time to think. This is Episode number 94 on the docket, Your Honor. Science works. And I was going to add into the beginning of the description for this, please, Professor Dawkins, don't finish that quote ever again. But, you know, it's immortalized now. So the quote is, of course, science works, bitches. I don't ever want to hear him say that again. It just really, really, really sucked. I don't know. The rest of you guys, had you seen that particular clip of Richard Dawkins saying that?
It only works once.
Yeah, that's about right. And he kind of blew it right there, didn't he? Is it his peak?
When it went viral. I mean, he got after the 50th time.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way it fell for me.
I'm going to plead ignorance. I actually haven't seen it.
It's a surprise factor.
Yeah. Yeah, basically he got into a discussion about whatever it was at the time, and the answer was that, you know, faith doesn't get you anything, but science continues to work. And he basically said, because science works, bitches. That's about as close as I can directly quote him. Seriously, he had that little pause in there. It was like he was weighing his options. Should I go ahead and do... Oh, what the hell? What are they going to do to me?
See, now, I haven't seen all, but I've seen some of him reading his hate mail. So I can imagine him saying the word bitches, because he said other things before.
Well, the worst part about it was in a public forum, too. That's what hurt.
Yeah,
I wouldn't make such a big deal out of it. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Well, it was just that it was, like you said, it just went viral, and it was just like, oh, God, really, Rich? Come on. Don't really...
Don't drop to that level.
Yeah. Well, basically, yeah. That's what it came down to.
I made it sound like he was asking for another crumpet.
Can I have another crumpet, bitches?
Oh, God.
I don't know. Is that how it goes in England? Because it doesn't sound right to me.
I don't know. Let's find out. Chris, does it go like that in England? I'm guessing probably not.
No.
No. Would you like another crumpet, bitches?
Yeah, I'm thinking no.
I believe the accepted vernacular is... I believe the accepted vernacular is tosser.
A wench?
Tosser. I thought tosser was vernacular for homosexual.
No.
Wanker.
A wanker?
No.
No, wait. Poofta.
You know what? We're
Chris, what is the European vernacular for homosexual?
Well, Europe's a big place, so there's probably lots of different ones.
Let it go.
In England, if you want a cigarette, it's perfectly acceptable to ask for a fag. Can I tax you for a fag?
Wow, this is really going in a direction I really was not anticipating.
Moving on.
But you know what? The only reason it's going in this direction is because we have easy access to advanced technology. Yes. Brought about by the science enabling easy communication across multiple continents.
See, now you're just leading the bit. That's the problem with it all. Okay.
You're welcome, bitches.
Thank you.
Let it go, Tech.
Well done.
Thank you. All right. While we're getting on over here, do we have an update on Heretic Woman at this point? I don't see anything from her yet.
Still having a trying to deal with it with her. But she's having sound card issues, and nothing's working.
Okay, so we'll see what happens. Before we get going with the actual discussion, Beth, who is chiming in right now over on the Q&A, and you know, thank you, used a quote that I believe is credited to Dr. Tyson, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Science is true whether you believe it or not. I believe that quote goes to Dr. Tyson. Anybody remember off the top if that's right or wrong?
I'm not sure, but I can look it up real quick.
Good luck on that one.
It just works whether you believe in it or not or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's basically the gist of it.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. And that's one of the great things about science. And that's exactly right. It doesn't matter whether you want to accept it or not. It just is.
Mm-hmm. And yes, you are correct. It is Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yes, longtime supporter of the show and our second Patreon subscriber. So thank you. We appreciate that. So
who's the first?
Wait, we have Patreon?
We have the first.
According to this, the first one is someone by the name of Lucy Fur.
Was the address listed as One Sky Way? I'm kind of guessing that.
Charlie Brown's girlfriend needs a shave.
You know what?
Leave the little redheaded girl alone, you motherfucker. Mean person, you.
Okay.
Number 666 Ninth Circle Road.
Is that the cold one, or is that the...
It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
It's all yes, it's the cold one, yes.
Sure. So... That's always a great quote. Thank you very much.
That's treachery. You know, that's the circle right above the 10th circle for lawyers and, you know, people who put eyelashes on their cars.
And people who spoil the new Star Wars movie. Don't do that.
Don't do that.
You know what? Everybody should know by now that Yoda dies.
You know what? It's got nothing to do with that. Here's the thing. For those of you that don't already know about it, I don't use the term love lightly. I don't, simply at all. But I will say it. Callie Wright, who is to me a love, Callie Wright went ahead and posted a spoiler on her Facebook page. It is a picture of an oversized car spoiler like you'd have on a little, forgive me for wording it this way, racer, and it says Star Wars across it, and she posted it to her Facebook page, and all I could type to her was ... You're a bitch, you know it, right? And you
That's
know what?
Fantastic.
Yeah, and she went ahead and she liked that comment. So, you know what? Thank you. Thank you so very much.
Sweetheart.
So, let's start with that, because there's a piece about this there's a whole bunch of different things that we're going to end up hitting on, and I don't want to settle too long on any one particular item, so we're going to bounce around to a whole bunch of things. Let's start off with movies. Real simple. Movies are a successive number of pictures shown in quick succession over and over and over and over again. And this is something that, you know, we know about. We've played with drawing flip books when we're bored in school. Mm-hmm. I've done it. I'm sure we've all done it at some point or other. But the idea of what photos, what movies are now, are completely foreign to the originations of it all, where you had a round cylinder with slits cut in it, and on the inside, drawn pictures in succession, and you spin it and look through the slits, and you would see each of the images over and over and over and over again. Not projected up anywhere, just looking at it. And now, it's not even a matter of that. Now it's just a high-intensity lamp going through and projecting the images onto the screen for you electronically. And I think it's just absolutely fascinating in and of itself, the idea that you can capture light, not a soul, but just light, and hold on to it for future successive generations. You can look at stuff that you never thought that you'd be able to. Pictures of like the construction of the Olympic class passenger liners, the Olympic, the Britannic, and the most famous, the Titanic. And those were monstrous pieces of machinery, holy smoke.
It still worked out for the old lady. She still threw the diamond into the ocean.
She did. She did. It would have been much more impressive if she had thrown it into the ocean back on top of the Titanic from, you know, Mir. But it's just me. Getting her up to Mir would have been a problem. No comment from there. All right, that's fine. So, see, the thing of it is, I'm still waiting for Heretic Woman to get her butt in here. Because she was...
I know.
It's just, you know, see, this is the thing. Technology is wonderful when it's working, but when it don't, oh my god, it's such a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
And then of course people want you to magically fix it, but they don't want to take the time to learn how to understand how it works in the first place. And some people actually try to pray to make it work, which is amazing as heck.
It's true enough. So, Bridget, since you had commented over on Facebook that you were driving like crazy and had oh so little sleep and everything, mm-hmm. I'm gonna throw it your way, because what was the comment that I threw to you back over on Facebook about this whole thing?
That I would be all right. There's science all around me anyway, so
yeah. Let's start off with the easy one. Look over okay. your left shoulder. Look over your left shoulder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the guitar.
I have a bass guitar and an amplifier.
You got an electric bass guitar. Do you even know how you get sound out of an electric bass guitar?
This late at night? No.
Wow, that's really... You know what, guys? That's it. Thank you. It's been a wonderful show.
The show's over.
You get sound out of a bass guitar the same way you get sound out of a vibrator. You vibrate it.
See, I just stick the cat in the bag and then start smacking the bag against the wall. And that's how I get noise.
That's not how the Irish do it.
One example.
Well, the Egyptians use bees in a box.
Stop.
It worked for Cleopatra.
One example that's real easy that a lot of people don't think about is cooking eggs. The albumin is a protein, and the reason why it turns white when you cook it is because the protein becomes denatured. And so the white goes from being slimy to being solid.
Got everything to do with music. That's great.
No, but that's science. that the average person that doesn't even really think about science uses when they cook.
It's, I believe it's a different reaction, but the more slightly more linking those two together, you've got the when you heat cheese, the proteins change as well, and it goes all stringy.
They unfold.
As on pizza, so
Yeah, because pizza's just all kinds of warm love right there. The part of the reason why. Actually, you know what? I can actually link this together. The bass guitar that you've got over there, how many, if I see it correctly on my screen, it looks like you've only got a single pickup right in the middle of the machine. That's right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, as somebody who's played various electronic instruments, bass guitar most notably, for those of you that are unaware of how instruments work in and of themselves, real quick... Strings vibrate the air. Shut up, hold it.
I'm sorry, Bueller is going nuts.
You know what? I'm gonna
The ferret is ferreting. He's full of ferret business.
The ferret looks like he might the speaker. Take up the bass in a minute.
Yes. It's right there.
Yes.
He's been fighting with my gig bag like all afternoon, but he's lost badly. Sorry.
See, ferrets, Joey? Yeah, ferrets, otherwise known as carpet sharks, correct?
Also known as cat snakes.
Yes, they are. So there you go. Right, so here's how I can link electric guitars to cooking. You don't think that I can do it? Watch this. The strings on an electric instrument are wrapped in magnetic material. They have a coil that they vibrate when you pluck them or you strum them or however it is that you activate them. I actually had somebody that I knew had a hammer from the inside of a piano, and he would hold it in one hand and tap the strings in order to play the bass guitar, in order to get the strings to vibrate. They vibrate where the pickup is. The pickup is an electromagnet. It picks up the waves that are coming, the new electric force that's coming from the sound that's being produced from the strings vibrating, transfers it into the electronic, into the amp, and then, boom, it gets translated into a frequency that everybody can hear.
Well,
you on board with that?
Meanwhile,
Bill Nye comes exploding out of the wall going, "Stop trying to steal my show!" Bill Nye, science
guy. At the bottom and top of each string is a sensor. And what that does is it detects the oscillations, because the entire strength, the entire string has a given number of wavelengths that it can support at any given time. The two sensors can measure this, and then they send that information to two pots, which is an electrical term. I'm not exactly sure. But one detects the volume, one detects the tone and pitch, which then those two put those out to the capacitors, and then that goes out to the output jack.
I don't know what instrument you're referring to.
It's called a humbucker. It's the humbucker wire diagram.
We're gonna have to talk a little bit more about that later, because the design that you're talking about, I've never heard of this particular design, and I'm fairly familiar with the humbuckers, but the particulars of it all, we'll talk about it afterwards. Here's how I can link the instrument to cooking. There is a system of cooktops now that don't use gas, they don't use electricity. They use magnets. They use magnetic fields that oscillate, and if you have a pan that is itself magnetic, it will induct induction tops. I forget exactly what they're calling it, but the idea is that they basically vibrate the molecules that are magnetic in the pan, and it heats up because of that, and well, your pan heats up and nothing else. So you could pick up the pan and put your hand right on top and you'd never know anything was going on.
Yep.
Don't try that if you've got a metal ring on your finger.
That's a very good point. That's a good safety tip right there, Egon, that I hadn't thought about. Wow, that would be really bad. So, okay, so that was a little bit on the weird side, and Joe has just sent me an image so I can take a look at that schematic in a couple moments. Anybody else, throw stuff out there for so I can actually take a look at this picture that he's sending over. Not helping at all. Okay, somebody, talk about... You know what? Tech? Commodore 64s.
Oh, my God.
Mic drop.
Really?
I had a ColecoVision.
A what?
Oh, foreigners. It was a video game console.
You do realize over in his country you're the foreigner. You know that, right?
Yeah, I know. Exactly. That's the irony of the statement. ColecoVision was a popular game system here in the United States, along with other such consoles like Atari, Nintendo. Atari actually had a really long lifespan. It went through several revisions. I had the Atari 2600 and the middle one was the 5200, but I did not have that one. We did wind up with the 7800, which actually came with a controller that had two individual buttons that did two different things, which was unusual and unheard of until other game systems, other game consoles came out with more than one button.
Mm. By the way, what was the theme of today's show?
Technology. Yes, look how video games have enriched our lives. Now we can take out our violent homicidal tendencies on video games instead of our coworkers. I can't tell if that's a good thing or not.
Very well.
Okay, before we go on, just in case something has gone wrong for the Hangout, my apologies. I had something suddenly said, a plugin has stopped responding. Do you want to stop it? And
did you say yes?
No.
Good
but
boy.
All of my video had frozen, even though I was still getting audio. So if the video portion of the Hangout in the archive is screwed up, yeah, that's me. I'm sorry. I have no idea what just happened, but we're still here. We're still going. So, okay, we're going to work with it.
If I'm not mistaken.
This is a great example, Tech, of why people end up either pleading or praying with their technology. Because here you've got a message saying, this item has stopped. Do you want to stop it? Well, how can I stop it if it's already stopped?
Well, to be frank, it did say is not responding, which is not quite the same thing. But I was a little panicked. It did, just a little bit.
If I'm not mistaken, the point of the show tonight is to look at science in everyday life and how underappreciated it is.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to wait on this one. I mean, it's the obvious elephant in the room, but since nobody else is coming up with any, think of how different your life would be without telefax, laptops, GPS, the computer you're watching us on right now, your telephone.
I remember.
I used to get spam by fax.
Mm-hmm. I think the telephone is the biggest example of underappreciated scientific achievement we have today. I mean, look at it. 100 years ago...
Come here.
100 years ago, how was long-distance communication achieved?
Horseback.
Carrier pigeon.
Yeah,
well, okay, that's going a little bit further back. Let's say 200 years ago, if you wanted to get a message to somebody a couple towns over, how'd you do it?
Telegraph.
Well, before that, yeah, you were right the first time. Horseback.
Loud.
But then, 150 years.
Smoke signals.
Pigeons.
Dude, I'm the world's biggest smartass. What do you expect out of me?
For you to shut up and let me finish. 150 years ago, you had the telegraph. 100 years ago, the telephone became the big thing. You know, back in the 1920s, you had the Brazier Brigade. That's probably not going to make a lot of sense to some of you.
No, not really.
So the Southern Bell, South Bell or Southern Bell or whatever it was, phone company, before they got bought up.
Ma Bell.
They used to have, you know, the pay phones that you would use out on the streets. We still have some in some places. But the point is, you would deposit your change, and they had to have somebody go out to collect that money. Well, the ladies who were hired to do the job quickly found out the money wasn't counted until it was, you know, turned in. So what they used to do was they would take, you know, rolls of quarters and, you know, stuff them in their bras and, yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm trying really hard not to make the Donna joke right about now.
Look up the Brazier Brigade, you'll see what I'm talking about. But anyway, back to my point. You went from having to, you know, pick up your phone, be like, you would speak to the operator, who would then connect you to whoever you were trying to reach.
Then we ended up having, you know, the fully automated system with switchboards where, you know, you dial your number yourself and you're able to reach whoever it is you're trying to get to. Fast forward a couple decades, you have the first mobile phone. Granted, it's the size of a friggin', you know, elephant. You can beat somebody to death with it.
Toaster.
Yeah, well, the...
Fast forward just 15 years later, and you start seeing cell phones the size of, you know, what could be compared to a pocket watch that are able to connect your calls, check your email, run, you know, more calculations than your home computer, locate your location on GPS, translate multiple languages for you, take notes for you.
Well, the phone became what you're actually talking about, technology kind of going cross-platform.
And this is
what we're holding aren't actually phones anymore. They're actually computers that have the capability to make phone calls.
Yeah. And, you know, I wasn't even getting to the idea of the smartphone yet.
Yeah. And Jay, if I could just jump back in there, because it's a really interesting bit of technological history, how a lot of that has changed. So originally, like, telephones were available, but it was only on a direct line between two fixed points.
Yeah.
So that's great. You know, the hospital needs to call, you know, a doctor's office or something like that. But it's no good for a person if, you know, you want to call more than one person.
Oh, well, hold on. You had the party lines back then, too.
I remember those.
Yeah.
My mom
yeah,
told me
where,
about those.
Where the line would be open to anyone on there. And that is still the case in some parts of the world on there where they haven't upgraded the telephone systems. But then when you got to the advent of the exchanges where you had and you got the introduction of the public switch telephone network where you could basically phone up and lift the receiver, speak to an operator and get your call directed. On there, it was all done at that point pretty much by hand. And what the operators were doing was physically connecting two pieces of copper wire to put the call through.
Yep.
And
the old switchboards.
Yeah. And if you wanted to make a long-distance call, say a coast-to-coast call in the US, it could actually take hours to set up a connection.
Will you accept the charges?
Yeah, because the operator you first speak to has to then put it through to, like, the main exchange for the city or the state. They have to then link to every major point along the road on there till you get to your destination.
And nowadays, how does it work?
Automated switching.
Well, by most assumptions, magic.
Yeah. But a lot of the early automatic switching gear was pre-computer. It was electromechanical or mechanical in nature. And as you dial the number, your phone handset would send a certain voltage down the line, which would switch in, drop something into a circuit. And it's only fairly recently that fully electronic or computerized switching has happened.
And now we have Shujin bringing out the fossil.
Yes.
Tank, load the jump program.
But yes. A lot of this system is, particularly here in the UK, relying on lines, pieces of copper that were buried in the ground or hung up on poles maybe 80 or 100 years ago.
Exactly. I mean, hell, we still have telegraph lines that are still used to transmit telephone stuff. But, you know, the telephone is just one good example. Without science, your car. wouldn't even exist, let alone work. We're talking about the technologies developed for lightweight materials, composites, alloys, let alone the fact that, you know, you have all the electronics at work in your car now. And before even we had electric lights, back when cars still had lights that you had to physically get out, open the door, and light the candle in it. Even then, the internal combustion engine, marvel of its day, we still use it today, sadly. I personally would like to get rid of it. I mean, with all the innovation we've made in just the last 100 years, we should be past that by now. But unfortunately,
we're working on the battery tech right now.
Big oil.
Again, it's a situation like with the telephone, where the underlying idea is the same as it was, I say, 100 years ago.
The technology
is massively better than engines were, you know, even 20 years ago.
I've got one that's just going to, you know what? Plain and simple, this one trumps them all. Because without science, 1 billion people today would be dead if it weren't for one scientific breakthrough.
Vaccines?
Penicillin?
Nope, not even that.
Harbor process.
Allow me to introduce you to a man by the name Norman Borlaug. A little assuming Iowan, who, through the process of breeding plants, came up with a hardy enough wheat strain that we still use today, that without it, 1 billion people on this planet would have starved to death. That is more impact than any vaccine, than any war.
There's also a guy by the name of Haber, a German chemist, who around turn of the last century sometime, I don't have the exact date, came up with a process for creating basically nitrogen-based fertilizers, which had a massive impact on farming. And without that, agriculture in its current form wouldn't exist, and the planet would only be able to support, you know, maybe two-thirds the number of people.
Fritz Haber, synthetic. Yeah. Oh, well, him and Carl Bosch.
Mm.
So, yeah, actually, you're right. without them, they're estimated to have saved 2,720,000 lives, or 720 million lives. That is roughly a quarter of the people. Wait, what number are we at right now?
It's about a third of the world's population, which is about a third, 8 billion.
We haven't broken the 8 billion mark yet?
Not as far as I know.
You know what? Just for S and G's, let's just call it 8. Just for the hell of it.
Mm.
I don't want to be dealing with decimals tonight.
Yeah.
But still, roughly a third of the people on the planet.
Yeah. Just the idea of alloy technology in and of itself is an amazing thing. I mean, my buddies and I tonight, we were even just talking about how far these technologies have come to where back in the 60s, transparent aluminum was a fictional thing for Star Trek. And just in the last couple of years, they've actually figured a way of taking molten aluminum and bombarding it with X-rays in such a manner that the crystalline structure lines up in such a fashion that it is effectively see-through. It's not completely glass, but it's translucent enough that you can see through it. It's effectively transparent aluminum. Who knew? And the whole reason why they did it was because they were like, I wonder how we can make that work. I love that. I love that about science fiction, where people just goes, let's give that a try.
Look at the tricorder.
Well,
somebody's actually making one.
Yeah, and, well, depending as to how you look at it, these current smart devices, not too far removed from them now.
Well, they, you know, given the accessories that you have, a lot of the smart devices are localized, okay? The handheld tricorder had the ability to scan wider-ranging areas and phenomena and things like that. So the guy who's creating his tricorder system, he's working on his second version of his prototype. He's trying to do it where it's, you know, geared up towards a wider area of the environment, because we've got the localized part down. You know, you put on a Fitbit or a smartwatch or something, you sync it with Bluetooth to your phone, you put the proper app on there that knows how to interpret the data and give you a little readout and stuff, and, you know, maybe you're lucky enough to have a phone that has a barometric sensor in it. You know, okay, fine. You know, you're good to go for it yourself. But he wants to make the one where, you know, you can actually scan a human being who's not connected to your device, or can read out all the different fields and fluctuations in the surrounding areas, so you can see what's going on in the infrared or the magnetic or RF or all the various stages. So he's kind of going a little bit bigger. That's all.
Yeah. Okay. So people are doing this. But the whole idea of being able to use a remote scanning or sensing stuff has come along massively. And you were talking about the use of like smartphones and webcams and things. I recently read an article. I think it came out end of last year with the Ebola situations in Africa, and some hackers have found ways of using like a webcam or smartphone camera to check people's like pulse rates, blood pressures, temperatures on there. So if you have a really infectious patient, you don't actually have to handle them. You don't have to use thermometers or equipment that comes into contact with them and then has to be sterilized or disposed of.
It's freaking amazing.
And it's the kind of that kind of capability was almost certainly never dreamed of by people who thought, yeah, let's put a camera and a phone on there, it'll be fun.
Yeah. there's so many different areas where technology has impacted life in weird ways that we don't even appreciate. Let me give you a good one. Even though it may not seem like what you think I'm going to be going for, my drink of choice right now is basically a hybrid of hot cocoa and coffee with heavy cream. It's a mocha. But coffee itself, I mean, coffee, the reason why coffee became is because we went exploring and we brought it back using boats. The ability of traversing across a surface that you can't walk on, most of us can't walk on, you know, that may seem inconsequential, but okay, yeah, there's that whole smallpox thing. But I mean, besides that, it's a good thing, coffee. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless it's coming out of the back end of a cat.
Yeah.
I don't do so, but
yeah, I know what you're talking about.
The navigation on their techniques that they used for getting there.
Yep, right where I'm going.
Really difficult, and there was a few years ago a series put out by the BBC called Longitude, which there was a massive challenge from like the Navy authorities to to find some way of accurately finding your position at sea, because all of the methods basically relied on knowing what time it is, and pendulum-based clocks don't do very well on a ship that's going up and down in a storm.
No, it doesn't.
That's why you have to wear tight underwear.
No. Oh, God, no. No, 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 no. And I know where you're going. No, we're not going there. Not at all. What we can do is, well, you know what? Let's kind of follow this back a little bit. Navigation without electronics, the good old-fashioned analog, was done with simply taking advantage of being able to look around. How cool is that, really? You don't really think too much about it, but you look up the night sky, there are dung beetles that can navigate where they're going by looking up at night and seeing different positions of the stars and the swath of the rest of the galaxy in the sky. They're that sensitive to be able to see it. We're not the only ones with weird-ass technology for navigation. And Chris, like you were saying with the BBC, they had this thing. They had these giant, basically wind-up clocks that Flava Flav would have loved. Kids, by the way, if you don't know what Flava Flav is, look that one up. You're going to scare your parents, so go ahead, look that one up in a little bit.
Flava Flav!
A giant watch that they would take on ships to figure out, where is noon now? Okay, how far away are we? That had to have been part of it all, too.
Hmm. Yeah, and so sometimes that's a great example where the science and the technology was driven by an immediate need on there, because, you know, if you don't know where your ship is or where it's heading for, huge numbers of people lost their lives on there through ships getting lost and foundering, etc. And then, but there was lots of different methods being tried, including, again, based on star charts and things, but you can only use those when you've got a clear sky. And even on land, navigation relied on paper maps for a long, long time, and compiling those was massively labor intensive. On there, and so again, the whole advent of GPS technology has made navigation safer and easier. For everything from cargo ships to like trying to find a restaurant.
Now, see, thus far we've been focused pretty much on the macro.
Mm.
You know, things that are bigger than us. A lot of people look at science. People look at the cell phone and the computer and the modern automobile and think, you know, we're at the pinnacle of scientific progress. How can we possibly top this? We're topping it every day. Look at subatomic physics.
Oh, God, yes.
The work that they are doing right now with just neutrons. You know, the electron is what makes a lot of life as we know it today possible, because, you know, electric currents and such. But neutrons. With the neutron, with the stuff they are studying now, you've got, you know, potentials for new sources of energy. You've got potentials for biologic and medical research. I mean, with neutrons, you can actually get into a cell and figure out, okay, what exactly is this cancer growth doing, and how can we stop it on a molecular level? You can figure out how to make better paint.
And this is one of the areas where it really hits home as in the past. There's a lots of money being spent on, say, subatomic physics, particle physics, on astronomy and cosmology, both in, say, ground-based and space-based observatories. Some massive projects underway to look at detecting gravity waves from objects that orbit, say, for example, orbiting around black holes, which will give us another tool to understand the universe with. And a lot of this has no visible sort of financial or investment return on it. On there, it's not being done on there to, it's being done to understand the universe and how the world works. And then maybe something amazing technologically will come out of it, or out of the technology that we developed to, in order to answer these questions. But there is the tremendous intellectual value and value for humanity in understanding, you know, just going out answering the question and then trying to understand the world around us.
Yeah, what I was gonna do, Bridget, was actually bring you in on a piece that it's gonna be right into your wheelhouse for the medical side of it all. Some of us remember back from the 70s, the TV show MASH. Mm-hmm. MASH was set in the 50s during the time of the Korean War. And if you've watched any of the medical stuff from that era, you would see that they would grab bottles, glass bottles that they would literally hang over over patients or put them on their chests or whatever as they're transporting them. Mm-hmm. And glass is wonderful because you can boil the hell out of it and kill anything that might be in it growing in there. And mm-hmm. how great that was to be able to do that, but then what was the downside of using glass?
Well, it could break, and it also had a lot of weight. And it was hard to transport because it wasn't collapsible.
And then what happened? What changed that?
Plastics.
You might remember a movie by the name of The Graduate. And the great line in there, are you listening? Plastics. Plastics changed so much. IV bags. Mm-hmm. How much do they weigh now by comparison?
I mean, less than an ounce. I mean, they're just so lightweight.
So at this point, they're weighing just whatever it is that they're holding on to.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just the liquids inside of them, but when they're transported, they're empty. So they weigh little to nothing.
Yeah.
Hundreds of them. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And at this point, plastics are almost everywhere. I mean, the casing that I've got for my little mini computer over here is there's lots of plastic in it. There's nylon, a whole bunch of otherwise synthetically produced materials. The glass that's in it is very specifically formed with the ability for it to detect when somebody is touching on it, which unfortunately, some people have found the hard way that their butts are actually really good conductors for this kind of thing. And there's a particular person that I'm going to be singling out, and maybe I'll let her know later that I mentioned about this. Hi. No. Yeah, it's okay. She knows what she did, even though she didn't know she did it at the time. But yeah, butt dialing is not something that you want to do. And kids, by the way, remind your grandma, the term is butt dialing,
not a booty call.
Right. Thank you very much. I was hoping that somebody was going to remember about that. You don't really much care. You really don't want to explain any much better than that. But plastics, I mean, plastics changed everything as far as to transporting of foods, comestibles. When glass was king, whatever it was formed into was it. And that was it. If you had a round shape and you stacked the stuff together, you had a lot of empty space.
Yeah.
You had to reform it into squares in order to fit it into cases, and then it was brittle and would break. And then you got plastic, and then you could shape it any way that you wanted. It would flex, it wouldn't break, and it was far lighter in weight. Joey, right into your alley on this one. You've got less weight to transport. What does that translate into?
Less fuel used, less manpower used, much easier on the logistics. You can transport more.
And, Chris, England, the big transport piece for England for years had been the rail system. Maybe not necessarily the most efficient method, but for transporting cargo, it's like one of the best ways, other than just, you know, grabbing a tractor trailer truck and bringing stuff around.
Yeah, there's a freight rail line not far from here. And a lot of stuff, particularly big, heavy, bulky stuff, gets shipped by rail. But as we also obviously do massive amounts on trucks, and still got huge amounts coming in from overseas and going out via container ship. You've talked a lot about the advantages of plastics or more properly what we call polymers, is that you can tailor the properties of these materials to pretty much any application that you want. So obviously within certain limits. So you can have polymers that are safe for boiling water in, such as, you know, using an electric kettles. You can have the ones that are either flexible or plastic or rigid, with a huge different range of strengths and properties. And again, the next thing on these is people looking at stuff being done with nanomaterials and new from 3D printing style composite materials that will expand what we're capable of doing in terms of, you know, like material sort of strength and weight and moldability.
Yeah, it's exactly right. There's so many pieces about just that in and of itself that these technologies just ripple out from there. What I wanted to go with specifically, though, before I finish you off on that one, as far as rail lines are concerned, locomotives as external combustion engines, and yes, by the way, that is another piece of the technology. We went from external combustion, which is what a traditional steam boiler locomotive would utilize, versus an internal combustion, which is what cars and trucks utilize, and those kinds of things. Yeah,
we still use external combustion today.
Yep. Mm. Yep. That's where I'm going, though. The first ones, 3-4 miles an hour at a time, at an efficiency of like something like 3%, using logs that were cut, and then switched over to coal, and then switched over to diesel. And currently, what technology, what power system would most of these be utilizing if they're trying to keep up with the latest possible technological leaps forward for generating power into those wheels?
Just remember, don't piss on the third rail.
Yeah, it's commonly a mixture of diesel and electric.
Nuclear fusion.
Ha! But just think of the train in general. How much can a train move?
Dragon Ball Z people got that joke.
I don't know. It's basically the only limit is like the length of the train.
To a certain degree, I mean, a lot of it's going to depend on the nuances, of course. If you've got a flat track, it's just limited on how much power you can put into the wheels themselves after a little while. And all right, let's be fair. The brakes. More important than getting it moving is getting it to freaking stop. If you've ever seen one of these freight transport trains that are like a mile and a half long, you don't want to be in front of those when they need to try to stop.
That is kind of downside. That's the beauty of trains is, you know, granted they might not start out that fast at first, but the thing is that amount, the power that they generate applied over such a long period of time, they're able, you know, they start out real slow. You've seen how trains move. They start out real slow, but eventually they get up to speed. And all that momentum, there's a reason why, you know, we have all the controllers who are, you know, paying attention to what trains on what track.
Yep, there's a little... Oh, now see, here's where, again, these things really just dovetail all into themselves. The concept and the design for the maths that go into generating the numbers in regards to inertia. You get a freight train rolling, you have to figure out how many tons are in there, how fast is it moving, what is it going to need to slow down, how long is it going to take, how many cars is it going to plow through before it stops if somebody doesn't get out of the way. It's a bad day when that happens. But it's just one more thing. The concept of being able to quantify all these physical properties, that's another piece of it all too. The pieces with that really start to get into the headier parts for me, though. I mean, the idea who is it? Newton is credited with calculus, I think it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yet we've got stuff that apparently somebody else came up with it like a couple of hundred years before even him.
I'm not sure on the history on that.
I'll check for you.
Yeah, if I remember right, there was they found they were looking at some manuscripts, music or parchment that had stuff that was erased off of it in order to reuse the whatever the paper was. And I just remember this from...
I think you're referring to Leibniz.
Could be.
Gottfried Leibniz.
Could be. Don't know. Who
he's claimed to have independently invented calculus alongside along the same time frame as Isaac Newton.
Oh, no. There was something that was apparently from like Greek antiquity.
Oh, you're referring to Archimedes. He had a precursor to it, but
okay. So
method of exhaustion apparently to compute the area inside a circle.
And so, I take that's just like an iteration of constantly looking at smaller and smaller parts of it.
Yeah.
The idea that you can get such immense calculations done with little pieces of information well understood is kind of freaky. The idea that the ancient Greeks came up with a very accurate representation of the size of the Earth, I mean, a long time ago, right. Wrap myself up into...
Millennia is the term you're looking for.
Sure, yeah, fine, a long time...
The plural.
Yes, a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away in a place known as Trenton, New Jersey, they came up with stuff to understand much better what was going on, and it was pretty impressive, really. I mean, they did a lot in ancient Greece of thinking through a lot of stuff with nothing even close to the technological abilities that we've got now. I mean, hell, even the abacus. And truth be told, I don't know how an abacus works, how you're supposed to use it, but you can apparently do huge calculations. Same thing with the slide rule. Got us to the frickin' moon and back. Actually got us to bring a couple of guys back from the moon that otherwise might not have made it. So, you know, good on you, Grumman. And let's put it this way, Tech. When was the last time you used a slide rule?
A couple years ago when I showed it to my son.
Okay, let me rephrase this. Professionally.
Oh, does professionally include BDSM?
No.
Because in some places...
PG-13.
That's why you see it, Chris.
This is not a Power 10 show.
Professionally, in my industry, I have not used it.
Lasers.
Yeah, that's good.
But yeah, pretty much went out before I was born, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I was born in 69 when we went to the moon. When I was in school... Never saw a slide rule. Never. Never once. The closest thing that I had was a pencil case that had a little slider on it so that it would line up for multiplication tables. That was a close...
You know, to know just how ass-backwards my high school was, we still had typewriters.
We did, too. Manual.
The...
Yeah, my school had a budget. They actually were able to manage to purchase several Apple IIe's.
But, you know, lasers. Not even referring to, you know, the medical advancements with laser technology or the communication aspects, fiber optics and such like that. No. Just common day use of lasers. And I don't mean just, you know, pissing off your cat. Think of how much of a pain in the ass it is to use measuring tape.
I know.
Anybody who's used measuring tape without a helping hand, you know what I'm talking about. I had to use it earlier today. But we have laser technology that now has the little thing with, you know, it even has adhesive. Another little aspect we could talk about. I'm sure 3M would love the verbal blowjob. But you stick a laser on the wall, and it shines, and it tells you within, you know, micrometers of, you know, exact distance that laser is pointing from where it starts. You've got lasers that tell you whether or not you're level or not.
Hmm.
The only thing we had before that was what? The little...
With the bubble?
Vial filled sure with antifreeze or whatever that, you know, you're trying to, okay, edge it a little this way, edge it a little that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and on top of that, lasers now that will tell you what the temperature reading is on a particular location.
And lasers are what make 3D printing possible.
Yes.
Yep. Chris, you were going to say. Now we've completely derailed you, I'm sure. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they're a good laser. Sort of another good example of just how one discovery has led to so many applications. You know, everything from optical data storage, measurements, on there being able to accurately. Scan a 3D object.
CDs, the modern hard drive.
Biometrics.
Yeah.
Yep, and tattoo removal.
Mm.
I mean, it's something you don't really think about, but
yeah, true.
We actually use lasers to store data in a three-dimensional format inside of crystals.
Here's one: microwaves.
Yeah, not lasers, but
yeah, we're going a little bit further on the spectrum here because now we're no longer invisible light, but microwaves.
Yep, and microwaves were the all right. Hold on a second, because laser is an acronym.
Yes.
Light stimulated by I used to remember it.
Light amplified by stimulated emission of radiation.
Thank you. And the precursor to that was the maser, which was almost the same thing. Microwaves amplified by stimulated emission of radiation. And that's what your microwave is doing.
Except it's not.
Don't look at me.
Mother of it's, you know.
So the maser is basically the microwave equivalent of the laser. But as in a microwave oven or whatever, it's just emitting microwaves on there which heat the light. It doesn't need to focus them into a laser style beam on there. Although there is a possibility, because then you might be able to get a char grill effect.
I'm trying to remember the name of the component that made the microwave pretty much what it is today. Not like the microwave oven, but what?
Oh, that's easy. Tappan. Kenmore? Frigidaire. It's got to be one of these. I know.
The component. The component.
Oh, you might be thinking of the magnetron.
Yes, the magnetron. Originally developed how? To amplify microwaves for use in radar. Yep. And how has it changed the world for us today? Let's see. You can cook your dinner in 6 minutes. You can switch the channels on your television without even having to get up.
Mm. And for those that want to try to figure out how to do it, I don't recommend it, but you'll piss off the FCC. If you are rated by FCC because you are operating out of band, shall we say, transmitting, broadcasting, where you're not supposed to in the radio spectrum, and they check out your house and they raid you because they're going to find all of your transmitting equipment, they will confiscate your microwave oven because the magnetron operates in a radio frequency band that can be utilized for transmission.
Hmm. Well, that would explain all the funny looks I get whenever I try to pop a TV dinner in.
That's just great. That's just great.
I was wondering why Michelina was trying to talk to me. Oh wait, no, it's Mrs. Callender now, isn't it?
I did once see a method of measuring the speed of light using a domestic microwave.
Really?
Yes. And by lightly microwaving a long bar of chocolate on there, it'll melt. First melt, and you only do it for a few seconds on there. You can then measure across the bar of chocolate and get the wavelength of the radiation.
Okay. Okay.
And work backwards with the frequency.
And now I have the YouTube channel "Will It Microwave" in my head. Thank you very much for that.
Is it safe to microwave that? Kaboom! Apparently not.
Sister channel to "Will It Blend"?
Yes, yeah, really. Ooh, even better. Stick it in the blender, and then the blender in the microwave.
Okay, for those of you that don't know about that channel, it's been discontinued at this point, but is it a good idea to microwave this? It was a great series. I mean, if you want to see the scientific
until somebody tried it at home. There's many fun scientific things you can try at home. But come on. You've all seen the Mythbusters enough to know you don't build a chicken cannon and start firing it at cars on the highway to test your theory. I'm sorry.
Right. So,
you find your ex's house and fire it at that.
We don't.
I wouldn't recommend that either.
We here at Holy Crap do not condone the acts taken by one tech.
And if you wanna go ahead and look it up, yes, there is a. Is it a good idea to microwave Pinkie Pie? Yes, it's in there. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe the answer is yeah. You should go ahead and do that. I very highly do not recommend microwaving an airbag. Apparently, this is detrimental to the microwave oven.
I don't recommend doing anything with an airbag other than having it in your car ready to go.
I would tend to agree.
Never ends well. But then again, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. There's another piece about lasers that are really, really super fascinating too. And it's got nothing to do with the whole paint the moon red idea that some people tried to use, or pissing off aircraft. Please don't do that. Please don't do that. Lasers have been utilized now in order to try to measure atmospheric disturbance so that visual telescopes can correct for aberrations in the atmosphere to get better, far more clear imagery than even what Hubble can theoretically do at some points.
What I think is really cool is there was a science fiction series books called Tom Swift. They were geared up for the young, for the tween and teenage people. And this young inventor, he's a genius like his father, and his family's created this whole company called Swift Enterprises. So think Iron Man without the Iron Man, or Tony Stark without the alcohol, but as a teenager. And one of the things that this young gentleman did was create a laser that it shot a beam up into the upper atmosphere and created basically the equivalent of a temporary miniature star. Not a real star. But it basically created a pinpoint of light, and then his measurement systems would measure how the light was warped from the atmospheric distortions, and then retune, using that information, all his astronomy devices, thereby getting extremely high resolution, high accuracy pictures of the universe, you know, the stars and everything else out there. We're just starting to do that now. I read about it as a kid in a science fiction fantasy book, and we're doing it, albeit slightly different means, but we're doing it.
Yeah, it's adaptive optics have been around in professional light astronomy telescopes for quite a number of years. On there, and it is the method of you shining a laser up to illuminate, I believe it's something, I think it's sodium ions in the upper atmosphere on there, although I may have not been quite correct, because these give out a very particular, whatever they're illuminating up there gives out a very particular frequency of light. They can then measure how that's being changed by the atmosphere. And then you said an array of mirrors within the telescope, which like move, you know, thousands of times a second, to correct for the, any aberration caused by the atmosphere. And it's in the latest series of, developments of improving, proving the image you can get through telescopes and stuff.
Time?
Yeah, tech.
Have they had this for more than 30 years?
I don't know. I know it's been around for at least 10, 15 years, I think.
Okay. The books are 30 years old. Now.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and lasers didn't really happen until 60, I believe actually 69. I could be wrong about that. I've forgotten exactly what year it was. Something like that.
First envisioned in 1953.
What was that, optics or lasers?
Adaptive optics.
There you go. So, excellent.
Envisioned or employed?
I don't know. I've not gone. I'm just looking through the history now.
Yeah, we'll see about that. By the way, in the meantime, Joseph, I know we've been kind of staying. I've been making sure that I've stayed off of your shoulders a lot more than normal because I know that you've been trying to work with Heretic Woman. I'm assuming since we don't have her yet that things have not gone well with all of this.
No, she's reinstalling her drivers.
Okay. Well, that's
loves Windows 10.
I don't think it's Windows that she's working with on that machine, right? Oh, it is?
Her new machine is a Windows 10 machine.
I think she had a new.
If you want to know how technologically backward I am, I'm still running Vista.
It's okay. I'm still using a cheap-ass operating system that I downloaded for free because I didn't pay for it. So,
Windows 7 32-bit.
Well, actually, 64-bit Linux, but
the 32-bit.
Yes,
mine's free too, by the way. So what did you want to ask me, Shujin?
Well, but that was part of it. But I wanted to check with you because on the computational side for design work and such in your area. For the amount of time that you've been doing professionally, things have got to have changed around enormously for you with the way that computers have changed the face of design that you work with.
You're referring to things like Adobe Photoshop and Illustrator and stuff like that. Vector imaging, huge breakthrough.
Well, in computational power, but the basic function remains the same. But and some of the available effects. But what I'm seeing changing in programming is that people aren't reinventing the wheel every time they make a new website. There's just vastly more resources available. I mean, that's basically what science is. It's a method of thought. It's a recording and a sharing of knowledge more than anything, no matter what it is. So, for a while, computers were magic, so they were magically exempt from the scientific rule where everybody was trying to do things their own way. But again, we're building new technologies on existing technologies in the same as every other scientific field.
Mm. Yeah, that's why one of the things that I wanted to make sure that I brought to the table was, even though I don't have one of them, I want to show off this, which is a medium-sized Sharpie pen, and this is about the size of an incredible piece of technology that has got me absolutely flabbergasted, which is a 3D printing pen.
Yeah, I saw that. I was thinking about getting that for my son, but
it is a rechargeable device. It's about the same size as one of these marker pens, and you put a stick of whatever the material is. I've forgotten exactly what it's made out of.
Something very akin to this.
Plastic.
Well, this is, the stick from a hot glue gun.
There you go.
But it's something very similar in principle.
Yeah. And it's designed so that you can, it'll melt whatever the material is, form it so that it extrudes through the tip, and you can draw in you want to draw in two dimensions on a piece of paper like you would normally with ink, sure, okay, go right ahead. But then you have the ability of drawing up away, 90 degrees off from whatever it is that you're working with, which is really kind of freaky when you consider that this is like two steps away from what Jarvis was able to do in the Iron Man movie with designing stuff on the tabletop for the new Stark Tower. For those of you that have actually seen the movie, and I'm you should really see the movie. Get the idea. Okay. You know what? Fine. You know what? For you, you know what? Since you're going to be that kind of a pain in the ass about it, fine. How about this? The idea of being able to put out a web page at any time, change anything that you want, the font, the color, the design style, the typeface, theoretically every day, every hour, you could have a new, what would be the equivalent of a newspaper. A daily edition, an afternoon edition, a night edition of a newspaper, but without the waste, every time that you wanted to, and automate that. How amazing.
The specific product,
master of the universe.
The specific product that you were talking about is called the 3 Doodler.
Yes, thank you very much. So, well, you know what? Well, I'll
can I go off track but on track again? In talking about the scientific principle, you know, there's one thing that's changing in humanity. I mean, science is relatively new. Since the Renaissance, it's been allowed to gain traction. But basically, it's using reality as a reference instead of other human opinion. And that's the big change. Because we can apply something against reality, and we can test it, and it works, or it doesn't. You know, it doesn't matter somebody else's opinion in that. And that's what we're building on, instead of
freezing up. There, but yeah, you can see where he's going is that,
and popularity as references, whereas now we're starting to use reality as a reference.
Okay,
did that make sense?
Well, it would have made a lot more sense if you'd come through the entire time of it all.
Oh, was I breaking up? Shit.
You froze.
Oh, was I in a nice position?
You know what? You can look back on the video and look for yourself and figure it out.
Do you want me to repeat myself, or
you know what? No, you've been too much of a pain in the ass for me all night. So you know what? I don't care.
Pain in the ass.
Go ahead.
I've been absent. How can I be a pain in the ass?
No, I'm teasing. No, go right ahead.
This ought to be good.
Do it correctly.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying we're the scientific principle is basically using reality as a reference instead of other human opinion. And that's it. Because until now, humanity's been following other human example. And now we've learned to test something, like an idea, against reality and see how it works there. And that's basically what science is. I mean, if it works, okay, write it down. We'll build on that, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
Whereas religion, they want us to just follow, you know, their example, their orders, their antiquity, it's social. It's not reality based.
And although you brought that back to religion, where was I going with this? The idea of testing something against reality and seeing whether your ideas actually match what happens in the world is, as Joe said, a core point of science, and then communicating that to others and having other people test that and see if it agrees is one of the, if not the single best way we found out of finding out what the nature of the world actually is. And any kind of, you know, if you believe that the truth, you know, and accurate information has any value, this is pretty much the only way of getting to it. because any kind of statement based on faith or tradition or popularity on there, unless it's been actually tested against what how the world actually works, could be true or could be not true, but because it's not been tested, you don't have any reason or justification to think it is true.
Yep. There's a quote, of course, that goes along with this one, and you know we drag it out every once in a while because we were asking about the first Patreon customer that we've got right now. It's this gentleman right here, Professor Richard Feynman. If it disagrees with experiment, it's wrong. In that simple statement is the key to science. It doesn't make a difference how beautiful your guess is. It doesn't make any difference how smart you are or who makes the guess or what his name is. If it disagrees with experiment, it's wrong. That's the whole of it right there. And that hurts when you're wrong, but it's a glorious example of being able to say, go ahead, run headlong against that wall. And then figure out how to get around that wall or how to tear down that wall, but figure your way way or another.
That's the difference, because when you're wrong, if you're looking at things from a scientific point of view, there's nothing wrong with that because, if you're wrong, well, that means that, somebody else is right. And it means you have more knowledge. So your comparison against reality, well, you know, it's making you a better person. But if you're just comparing yourself against another human and what they think about you because you're wrong, well, you're going to lose there.
You can also learn a lot from being wrong if you think about why you were wrong and, you know, if there's better ways of doing things.
Become a better human.
Yeah.
I wrote a blog entry not so long ago. It's called The Beauty of Being Wrong. If anybody's interested.
Yeah, that's a hard item to swallow a lot of times. Nobody wants to be wrong. But I know two guys I know two guys in particular who love to be wrong. Let's see if you know who they are. Out on the West Coast, a couple of guys who really can't stand to be around each other except in a professional environment, who have had a TV show on for a long time, recently canceled. Do you know who I'm talking about who think that...
Yeah, you're talking about Adam Savage and Jamie Heineman from Mythbusters.
And Joey, what was their great thing to say about failure? Do you remember their quote?
Oh.
Failure is always an option.
That's it. That's the one right there. I love that they would embrace being wrong. But there's a part of that still hurts too. Bridge, it's back over to you, and I'm sorry for making you the downer for the moment.
Oh no.
Sorry.
In your realm, being wrong sucks more than anything else. The medical side of biology, that area of science, that sucks when you're wrong. How the hell do you, without going terribly, personally, how the hell does somebody in this area deal with being wrong, considering how deep that can go?
Hopefully not get caught. If you're too wrong, that could lead to malpractice and all sorts of really bad consequences, so you try really hard not to be wrong.
I saw a series of pretty powerful photos. It was a guy, he was taking pictures outside of an ER room, and it was like a doctor who wasn't able to save like a 19-year-old. He was like just collapsed on the ground. It wasn't a clear photo, obviously, but I mean... Yeah, in the medical profession, that must be pretty direct.
You can't save them all, and it's not necessarily that you did something wrong. I mean, there's just sometimes you can't do anything. But medical malpractice is an issue. Medication errors, that's also an issue.
But do you really get the vibe from Feynman? Do you think he's really worried about being wrong? Do you get that vibe from him? Like, I don't.
Well,
no.
Look at it this way. Edison, I have not failed. I just found 10,000 ways that it won't work.
Yeah, but that was probably before the age of litigation.
And it was also where he had who only 10,000 interns all at the same time?
Yeah. he's the guy who showed you that that having the invention isn't the important part. It's having the money to pay for it.
Well, we've got plenty of commentary on that one, but
yeah, I do.
We can talk about how money makes things the way that you want them to be. But enough about Disney. What we need to do is see about getting wrapped up momentarily, because I've unfortunately got to conk out a little bit early. I've got a my little one's got a cookie date tomorrow, you could say, with family. So that's going to be pretty cool. So I need to make sure that I wake up in time to, you know, drive safely.
Sure. I continue for my wrap up on leading on from the idea of being wrong?
By all means, feel free. Yeah, you'll have the first stage on this one.
Yeah, certainly. So we've talked a bit about being wrong, and my focus here is mainly on the sort of skepticism and critical thinking, and I've been to a lot of talks and heard a lot of people speaking about and both in sciences and also in the skeptical movements about how easy it is to be wrong about something, and looking at the reasons why you get things wrong. There's a whole area of things about looking at the logic and the structure of arguments, where you get the logical fallacies, which are really interesting to look up. On there, there's all kinds of different mental biases that people have on there too, whether it's to confirm an idea that they already hold, or whether they put unfair value on, say, their own idea, or an idea they're emotionally attached to, etc. And this goes to, in the sciences, all kinds of things about the methods of accurately reading instruments and ensuring measurements are accurate, and looking at the statistics, how you analyze the results. On there, there is a massive amount of effort people have put into looking at the ways of people get things wrong. And it is fascinating to apply those things, to sit down and think about your own thought processes and things that you do, opinions you hold, and think, what actually are the reasons, you know, for the what are the positions here? What are the reasons I feel this way about a subject? Because every time I've done that, I've either found out, you know, that I've either been wrong, or I've been right but not fully understood the subject properly, and so it's a fascinating exercise.
Okay, Joey, I'm going to jump over for you at this point. Where would you like to end off?
Oh wow, man. I just move on to somebody else right now, because like we're going through
it's fine.
The process of switching down things right now.
It's fine. Bridget, I was going to be coming over to you next anyway, so where would you like to?
I don't have anything to add for once.
All right then, Joseph.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. Sometimes that's the way it plays out. That's okay. It's Joseph. No, Joey, you had your opportunity. You have to wait. Joseph.
Joseph. Is it plug time?
Plug.
No. Final thoughts.
Oh, final thoughts.
No, this is not a Power of 10 episode, so it's not butt plug.
Stop it.
Corner.
Yeah. You know, that's being what I just did about the looking at things you've done or said and thinking about, could they be wrong?
Nope. I wasn't listening to a word.
You might want to listen back to that.
Yeah, thanks for giving us an example.
Always glad to help.
Give us your final thoughts, Joseph. God damn.
Final thoughts. I hope we continue in the vein we have been in for the past. Well, I've got thoughts on that, but yeah. Okay. I think technology was going great until the 1980s, and then, you know, the corporations, instead of using it to make life easier for everyone, they used it to make profit. And we're getting back to a more democratic way of distributing technology. You've got Musk. He's working on an open source AI program, but it's getting slowly back on track. So I hope that continues.
Okay. Joey, did you want to finally have something?
Remember, folks, as we established many times throughout tonight, science is not just, you know, something off in some lab someplace else. It's not somebody else's thing. It's all of us. You're part of it, too. Whether you know it or not, science is going on inside you right now, not just in your brain. But you got to look at the big picture. That's the big thing, and that's the thing that a lot of people fail. That's the step that a lot of people fail at sometimes, is the big picture. So,
okay, sorry, I was muted myself out because I'm trying to type up to look up a particular piece. Tech, what would you like to finish off with while I mute myself and try to find this damn article I'm looking for?
Just remember, if you think, well, technology, who cares, you know? Well, just remember that the next time you whip your cell phone out and go to the bathroom and able to watch that porn video without having to drag a VCR and a TV or a laser disc in with you.
What?
You know what? Well, before I give you what my final thoughts were going to be, there is something to be said, however, for this. The technological explosion on the internet can be traced in some degree to the porn industry. The
VHS.
Various technologies for streaming online video, more compression, better fidelity, can be directly tied to the porn industry. There is an argument that can be made there. Is it a perfect? No, but it can very easily be a very good argument can be made there. Now,
what's interesting is that our technologies are the advancements that we've had, while they apply to things like space, medicine, things like that, some way, shape, or form, they also apply to our entertainment life. Look at the advancements that we've had in video card technology. We can play video games, sports games, regardless of the title, but video games where the players on the screen can be confused with video playback of real golfers or basketball players or football players. When they were advertising, I think it was about a year ago, they were advertising a golfing video game. They had the actual game showing gameplay on screen. My mom was informing me that she had seen the commercial, and she thought that it was one of the real golfers on television. They were playing back video footage of a really, you know, just a game, and she doesn't remember catching that game. And it turned out it was a video game. So that same kind of technology, you know, it's come from miniaturization. It's come from increasing the computational power of our processors so that we can crunch the numbers, you know, whether it's searching for alien life or processing calculations of how the universe came into existence or the motion of the stars in relation to whatever, you know. These things all, in some way, shape, or form, find their ways into our life, like mass global communications as just a primary example. But the porn one woke you up.
It did, because it's one of those things that most people don't end up talking about. And for here in the U.S., of course, for somewhat obvious reasons, the puritanical considerations of the country and society over here, be that as it may. My final thought on this, as far as to how technology is just basically overlooked and how important it's been for us, I'm not going to be talking about smartphones, computers. I'm not even going to be talking about analog devices of any description.
Hairspray.
No. I want to take back to a concept in and of itself. The idea that information should be freely attainable and freely distributable. What I was going looking for was specifically the article on the Library of Alexandria, established in the 3rd century BCE. The idea was that it was a repository of knowledge from all corners of the world where traders could come in, give their information, exchange information, store it so that people could learn. The idea that anybody at any time could come in to learn, doesn't matter who they were, what their social position was, how much money they had, what business they were in. If they wanted to come in to learn and exchange ideas, they could. The names of the constellations that we have are directly influenced by that. The stars in the sky, directly influenced by that. The ideas of maths, the ideas of the numeral system that we utilize were spread through from some of that. The idea that anyone at any time should freely be allowed to be educated is one of the absolute cornerstones of science's unwritten tenets. And I will quote, I will admit, from a Star Trek movie. And even though people roll their eyes at me when I say, I'm going to give you a quote from a piece of fiction, oh, this again. Doesn't matter where you get the information from, so long as it's accurate. And the line is this. Learn all that is learnable. That was one of the basic tenets of the V'ger probe. Learn all that is learnable. And it learned everything and anything that it could, and according to what they said, it learned everything of this universe. I find that to be a rather laughable idea, but okay, let's go with that. Let's assume for a couple of seconds that you can learn everything that is learnable, everything that there is to the universe. Okay, what then? Some people might say, okay, well then, congratulations, you won the game. Good game, everybody, that's great. Let's hit the big reset switch. No! All that there is to this universe, that's great. What else is there? Is there more? Back in the late 70s, early 80s, when Star Trek came out, the motion picture, as far as we knew, our universe is it. As a matter of fact, we didn't even have any firm conclusive evidence of anything that was going on with Pluto or the trans-Newtonian objects. There really wasn't much that was really thought about even at that point. In the years since, we've learned a lot. We're continuing to learn a lot. And what we have now, this free, open forum that's available to everybody, courtesy of Google, and, you know, thank you, is a direct extension of that library, of every library. Learn all that you can. Share your knowledge with others. The internet is the great equalizer for knowledge. Yeah, there's a lot of crap in there, but it's easier, far and away easier, to be able to say, I just read some piece of news according to my local newspaper. Let's see how accurate it is compared to everybody else. And yes, you have to kind of, you know, learn that you have to be able to do that meta part. But once you've got it in you that you can check it, to use somebody else's expression, the world is your oyster. You can do whatever it is that you want. You can learn everything that you can. And the only thing stopping you is you and your bandwidth. Yeah, you can go ahead and you can learn, but you have to be able to take it. You have to be able to take on the responsibility of learning. You can't force it on anybody else, but you can at least show them the door. As much as I opened up with saying it's okay to walk out of one door, don't forget, there's one that you can walk into also. But to use somebody else's expression to finish it all off, you don't just have to take my word for it. As always, everybody, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us tonight. We hope that you found something worthwhile in all of our perspectives. We think that they're worthwhile and valuable, and we enjoy the hell out of all of this stuff. As always, thank you to the panel tonight. Joseph, have yourself a very good morning. Thank you very kindly. Yes, now you plug all of the things.
Okay, I won't forget this week. Atheist Apocalypse. I just recorded episodes 3 and 4, season 2, yesterday. You can find that at atheistapocalypse.com.
And you can check show notes for that.
Thank you.
No worries. Chris, of course, as always, have yourself a good morning, and thank you. Actually, it looked like you kind of cut down on your smoking. Are you feeling well? I was a little worried there.
Last week I was smoking a lot because I was exhausted. This week I've actually had some sleep, so I'm okay.
Oh, that works out good. They were switching over to rum. That's great. So, do you have anything to plug at this point yet?
No, I don't.
That's okay. We'll fix that eventually. Tech, of course, you have yourself a good morning, and take very good care of yourself.
Absolutely, you guys do the same. Okay. And I have nothing to plug because it's an exit only.
Joey, thank you for your time, and you have yourself a good rest, finally. That's Tech's line, thank you very much.
No, mine's more like...
That's fine. I'll just mute him when I get the opportunity.
Oh, he blinked. Give it a rest.
Good night, Joe.
Good night, folks.
Bridget, good night. Thank you for your time. You have yourself a good evening. And you have anything to plug at this point?
Not yet.
That's perfectly fine. All right. Since we are going to be back on the 27th, I want to take this opportunity to, of course, extend happy holidays to everyone, no matter what celebration it is that you have. enjoy it to the fullest, preferably without overindulging in any way, shape, or form. And safe travels, of course, to all of us, especially those of us that are caught with the winter weather suddenly. This was the thing I was worried about. We've gone cold. We got something resembling snow over here in Buffalo, finally.
It'll be fine. It's going to be 65 again next week.
Yeah, it will.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how that plays out.
And then comes January.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's really looking forward to that.
Wake me up after Valentine's Day.
Oh, Arizona's beginning to look a lot
more
tempting.
You mean Singles Day?
Exactly.
Yeah, we'll see how this plays out. Anyway, a couple of items before we get on out of here. I'm sorry for not getting the information out for this week's show as early as I was intending to. I can only admit that, unfortunately, my personal demons have been hounding me, and it's been a little more difficult to deal with than normal. I'm trying exceptionally hard not to make my normal remarks be all about me on that angle because, well, let's face it, I've kind of done that to death, and nobody needs to hear that again. So there's a couple of things that have fallen by the wayside that I'm still trying to get back over to. So thank you very, very much for your patience. For those of you that are going to be traveling, of course, this holiday season, please be exceptionally careful in everything that you do. Be kind to the people that are helping you. Because, I mean, remember, they're still working, even if you're not. So keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of other things I wanted to end up hitting really quickly. Item one, Dallin, you know, we're hoping that you're feeling okay, and we're looking forward to having you back. Heretic Woman, I'm sorry all the crap happened for you tonight. Again, we'll see about getting you back. I'm just hoping it doesn't interfere with your shows, which you can catch up on Heretic Woman at Beyond the Trailer Park. You can find that at Facebook.com/Beyond the Trailer Park and find out what's going on with them and their show. I don't remember times and dates and locations of that, but you can find all of her information on the show notes and run it from there. And I intentionally wanted to wait to finish this off over here. We are still waiting for you to come home, Rafe. As of the recording of this past show, it has now been 3 years, 6 months, and 3 days since Rafe Badawi was unjustly incarcerated for thought crimes in Saudi Arabia. Our thoughts are still with you, and we are still hopeful for you and your family. Best of luck. So we will see all of you a week from now, or a little less than a week. Thank you for being with us, and again, happy holidays, be safe, and of course, Matane Fujin, I love you and I miss you, dream of me. And for, of course, all of you, I wish you the peace I no longer have, I wish you the strength that I've learned, I wish you well. Until the very next time we get together, everyone, good night.
You've been listening to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google Plus pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.